This talk is probably less formal, and it's more about the little brown beetles, about phylogenies or the lack of the phylogenies in there, and about us, human, that we sometimes don't get things right, at least in the first time. Talking about the Coralophis, they are little brown beetles, pretty nondescriptive creatures, brown and... oh, sorry, I just went too far. Well, this way. Okay. Hold on, I'm just... they are very small brown beetles. They are very abundant in all the canopy samples, in the litter. They're all fungivorous to a various extent. And the kind of characters that we are looking about is usually they are small. The head is concealed by the kind of hooded pronotum. The one of the lobes of the maxilla is missing. And the tarsi are four segmented. After, you know, kind of a considerable amount of research, we come up with some other characters, that the antennal clap has got a membranous vesicles, the abdomen has got the seven pairs of functional spiracles, and the larvae have the dorsal gland openings. When you look at the kind of ordinary diversity of Coralophis, there is not much to look at, really. They are kind of a small brown, hairy or unhairy beetle, sometimes convex, sometimes more flattened. The larvae show much more diversity, and they're much more interesting. Some of them are kind of disc-shaped. They usually have at least two pairs of gland openings on the first and the eighth abdominal segment. Some are really bizarre, like this guy over here. They've got a rostrate head which penetrates the fungi, and they all sporophagous in this respect. But there is another group of Coralophis which are less associated with Coralophis. They've got exposed head, they are flattened, and they are called latridid-like for some reason, somewhere described in Latridid, and they're very rarely encountered by people kind of looking into the brown beetles. They are basically cosmopolitan. The most of the groups are cosmopolitan, including the most of the genera. Looking at the classifications of Coralophis, this is the classification that was proposed by Stan Bosted, who in 1999 published the marvelous work on the whole Arctic, the polar Arctic Coralophis, and he tried to come up with some classification scheme. It wasn't cladistic, it was kind of intuitive. He tried to map some characters on it. And definitely he divided the group into the four subfamilies, the largest being the Corallophini. The interesting thing is that the groups that they had exposed had the enigmaticines and the orthoperus, the only other Corallophid that had exposed head, were placed in the separate groups. This is mostly due to the work that Jim Pakeluk did in 85 and 86, when he described the larvae of some of those groups, and concluded that there are lower and higher Coralophis. The lower Coralophis are the latridid-like things with larvae having no defensive glands, and the higher Coralophis are the others, which have defensive glands, and also they've got much more globular body. At that point, I would never really touch them with the stick, because there was such an interesting group of beetles. But there are some events that led me into that project. In about the late 90s, when I was working with Roy Crozon on the phylogeny, on the classification of Cucujoidea, Crozon pointed to the paper by Jim Pakeluk when he described the genus Fuadia and said that larva must be wrong. Because Jim described the larva from Florida Keys, and he concluded that it doesn't have any defensive glands. Crozon said that's impossible. All Coralophis larvae have defensive glands. He just overlooked them. When I was in Smithsonian, I eventually saw the larva. It didn't have the glands, so Jim was right. Crozon didn't buy it. Then there was another event. There was a genus Peripticus. It was described in Endomycetes. And I was based in Warsaw at that time, and my student and co-author on the talk, Violetta, was doing her PhD on Endomycetes. And we really wanted to get that particular creature because it was very weird. We got the specimens from John Lawrence at that time in Canberra, and she dissected the thing and came over and said, it's not endomycete. I said, why? Well, because he's got seven pairs of spiracles, and it's got only one maxillary, the lacinia was missing. So I said, well, something was wrong. And then I remember that Joe McHugh and Jim Packel described the larva of that thing. This is the Lepis matoid looking critter. And they really struggled to kind of keep it in Endomyces, but there was no phylogenetic framework, so they left it there, clearly pointing out that it didn't have all the characters. So we concluded that it was a coralophyte. And I sent an email to John Lawrence, who was a little bit embarrassed, and he said, well, I have coded that for my CD-ROM, and I noted that there were seven spiracles, and there was only Lacinia there, but I still thought it was an endomycete. It was just something that you didn't think laterally at that point. And I contacted Stan Bosted, the guy who was working on coralophytes, and said, well, this is probably just a giant coralophyte. And Stan sent me an email and said, no, it is impossible because it's at least twice as large as the largest coralophyte. You can see the size. And that's the type of the talk. So we still decided to go ahead with this, and we wanted to do the phylogeny, but Stan was kind of reluctant to do it, so we finally gave it up. But we published a short paper putting it into coralophyte, and that was it. And then we discovered a couple more genera in Australia. They're all from northern Queensland. The Pachalocodus has been described, but there is still undescribed larva of that thing. It's a little bit less lepismatoid, but has got all the characters of the coralophytes. And there's still undescribed genus Weirus, which is flightless, living on Mount Tozer in northern Queensland. So I got kind of built up some momentum into this paper. And then there was another odd coralophyte coming out. This is the genus Cladostatus, which was described in coccinellidae. When I was studying coccinellidae, we came across and said it's another odd coralophyte. And this time Stan Bosted got ahead and said, oh, maybe it is a coralophyte. So this is living in a nest of the stingless bees in Africa. It's completely wingless, blind, and everything is just put into one big sclera, including abdomen and the meso and metathorax are fused into one solid plate. Very incredible creature, and the head is just completely concealed. You can see the head is just down there. There's only four specimens known of that beast. And then recently, when I was poking around, I found that another genus that was collected by Al and Margaret in New Zealand. And it's really looking like all these other enigmaticines, but the larva has got eight spiracles, eight gland openings. I said, well, something is wrong. So either Jim was wrong or we were all wrong. So I decided that this is the point that we really have to do something and run the phylogeny. So we started to build up the data matrix, which is still kind of in status ascendi, but the project is, I think, coming pretty nice. We got all the major groups of coralophytes, including larvae and adults. We got several outgrowth taxa. We coded the larval and adult characters. There are some larvae, unfortunately, which are missing, so we couldn't do all the larval characters, but 99% almost are there. Because the matrix was very small, we can still use old good Hennig and run the implicit enumeration. And we got 10 most parsimonious trees, and we got an Ansel consensus for that. The interesting thing is that the enigmaticines are not monophyletic. So it looks like those things that were placed by Jim as a lower enigmaticines are paraphyletic, so we are proposing the new groups. The peripticines are well within the coralophytes, and it looks like we are proposing a new classification. The thing which was not included in that talk, I'm just finishing, is the Mega Coralophus. This is the thing that we saw with Jim in 91 in Bishop Museum. It is from New Guinea. It is a large beast, it's 3.5 millimeters, look like ordinary coralophyte. I wanted to include it in there. And I couldn't get hold of it because when Jim left field, we couldn't get the specimens. Finally, a week before I came here, I got the specimens from the Bishop Museum because they found the box. And I dissected it, and it is a big coccinellate. Thank you very much. It's amazing.
really cluttering up my samples. Can you come and get them out? I'd appreciate them a lot.
That is a problem. They are just too abundant. There's people are just overwhelmed with it. When you look into the collections worldwide, there is just thousands and thousands of them, and nobody is able to study them. Unfortunately, externally, they are very hard to distinguish. You have to really go into the genitalia to make. And they're marvelous. They're very good genitalia.